Hey everyone, welcome to More Than Meets These Guys. We are getting back into the UK with the Enemy Within comic series. But first, I want to take a second to tell everyone that Ed had to take a little bit of time off the show. He's having some issues come up, and I want to make sure that everyone knows he'll be back whenever he's good to go again. He's always welcome, of course. He's my co-host. Well, aside from Boo here, though. He's just having a little difficult time now. So just, send the good vibes. Email edhatestransformers@gmail.com and say, hey man, we got you. Take your time. Is pretty much what I told him. So just keep that in mind. You'll know when I know when he's ready to come back. So anyways.
I'm like the donut you throw on when you're good, nice, fancy tire.
I've had to do that recently. Twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're the okay. You're the thing I put on whenever I try to avoid the accident and hit the curb with my week old new tire.
I'm only good for like 50 miles, though, just so you know.
Yeah, I'm not.
Treads are gone. Shouldn't trust me.
Trust you as far as I'm gonna throw you. Anyways, I've only been friends with Ed slightly longer than Boo, so that should tell you something. But we're getting in the Enemy Within Part 3. And we are back with editor's letter. Oh, dude, I looked at this page. The editor's column is so hard to read. It's in teal.
Yeah, they reformatted it.
It's kind of rough. I actually don't mind the old style. The old style reminds me of back in middle school. You know, back when they used an abacus and stone tools. We would take and you would make the school newspaper. We would take. Print out things, we take and cut them out, and then we kind of paste them like a Tetris puzzle almost till they were perfect. Then you do a scan of that, and that's how you get your paper. And the original editor's section of this kind of looked more like that, and I kind of appreciated that. So, this is fine. It's just, as Transformers fans, we hate change.
It looks like they were low on magenta and yellow.
It does. We'll just pretend it's on purpose. We use all the cyan.
Right.
They're basically talking about there's actually kind of a cool contest. They're giving away in this issue a Kodak disc camera, which has like two I don't know if it said they were lithium batteries, but that seems like a little too early concept. I kind of think the nickel cadmium rechargeable batteries, mm-hmm. But maybe I'm wrong. So a disc camera, which is pretty nice for the time. 1985.
I vaguely remember those.
Yeah. And you get them you get those with this contest we'll talk about later in the issue. And also whenever you get letters printed, you get mini bots.
Yes.
Pretty cool little thing there. And I know you've done a little bit of checking around about this too, which is kind of neat, I don't know if you want to go into that at all yet.
Yeah, I've heard from some of the people I asked around about, and they asked people and got back to me, and basically you'd get a one of the small Transformers. You get like one of the mini cars, like Brawn or Huffer or one of those guys. And then this continued on, like, I guess into 86, because some people reported getting like aerial bots and protectobots, even like the limbs, not the main pieces. But
so you get
small ones like that. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I saw where Leanne Elliott actually posted in the Transmasters UK group about it, and said that she got printed, but they didn't send her anything because she's in the States. So I guess the long distance postage.
Yeah, that's too bad. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Once again, I mean, neat time capsule. This issue, I think, is full of time capsules, which is really neat about that.
Well, it seemed like they really go out of their way in the UK comics to give their fans free stuff. We got like nothing.
If you're lucky, you got those bad 3D glasses on the back of the. The issues back in the 80s, remember those things you send away for?
Oh yeah, really. I mean, you might get a no prize if you correct something,
the Marvel no prize. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Hey, good
and
job,
man. We got another bad deal in the stock exchange.
There is.
Like this guy wants Optimus Prime in the trailer
or Jazz
or Gears, and he wants to give you Wind Charger.
I mean, that seems like a good exchange, Wind Charger, Optimus Prime.
Yeah, for him.
There's another one offering this. Another one's going the wrong direction. Also offering Soundwave and Laserbeak with the guns for Jazz. not as bad as the wind charger.
He's being generous.
Yeah, he is. He's going, the wrong way. He's got to learn how to negotiate better.
Yeah. Like maybe these two need to get together and, you know, it'll either be the best deal ever or the worst deal ever. Depends on which way it goes.
Deal ever. The art of the deal was not with these guys.
There was always that guy that you'd trade toys with. You know, there's all neighborhood kids would always do that. Yeah. And it'd always be the one guy that's like, here's a broken Jawa, you know, for your AT-AT.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Like, come on, man. Talk to you every day about it.
Yeah.
I had to sort of avoid him. We'll walk behind trees and get out of his way so we didn't see you. Actually the Soundwave plus Laserbeak and the guns and all that for Optimus Prime is not a terrible deal. That actually would have been at least passable.
Yeah.
But
it would have been closer than, you know, Windcharger.
Man, like I love me some Windchargers with my first Transformer, but that's a bad deal.
Evan's like, I'm not giving up Windcharger for any Optimus Prime.
Okay, that's actually one of the ones I really am sad about. Like, you know, he's just like pre-rubbed Windcharger. He even had one of the legs would come out all the way, like the little tab in there, like when you pull out and you turn it, it kind of broke inside there. So I always have to push the leg back in when I was transforming to car mode.
Yeah, it was common with that.
Yeah, it was. I always wanted to see if I could find my original one. But yeah, it's who knows where it says. Probably into some landfill somewhere, unfortunately.
Thanks, on the shelf behind you hiding.
Dude, I wish. I don't even know if I have a Windcharger. That's kind of weird. I need to find one of those. But yes.
And, you know, you can tell the pre-rubs from the rub ones by the color of the red plastic.
Really?
Yeah. They're different colors. One is darker and one is lighter. I want to say the pre-rub is a darker red.
Uh-huh.
And it's a brighter red on the rub sign ones.
Okay. Because I know the one I had was almost like a burgundy red. So
yeah,
that would make sense because I've seen them like bright red because I've seen a lot of the rub symbol post rub. But that's kind of neat. I'll check that out. Definitely. But the Decepticon Fact File is Laserbeak, which is always a winner.
Yeah. And I like when they, I guess, point this out that he's the interrogator in the cartoon. He was always used as a spy, which that was Buzzsaw's job. But yeah, Laserbeak, he just like beat you up, torture you, and get information from you. He wasn't really the spy as intended.
Yeah, the fact files, a lot of the same way that the G.I. Joe, you know, text or file cards, they give you so much more personality than you'll ever see because, you know, it's a 22-minute toy commercial, let's be honest. But,
yeah.
I mean, these tech specs were always really good. I mean, Soundwave, he's always one of my favorites because he was always so sadistic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, Laserbeak's the same way here.
I always wanted to see Laserbeak like shut down and panic when his lasers run out of his crystals, the ruby crystals.
Ruby crystals of Burma.
Yeah, I was saying, do you get those from Burma?
Yeah,
I bet he was just overjoyed when they grabbed that mine.
Yeah, no joke. The vulnerability, a shortage of ruby crystals that power the lasers can panic its systems into shutting down. So what would happen? Would he just like start? He'd like run out of power. Would he just freak out and shut down, or would he transform to a tape and fall on the ground?
That's what I was wondering. And you know, you're thinking like an interrogator, so it's like he's giving him the third degree, and it's like, oh, my lasers ran out. Oh no, let me out, guys. He's like banging on the door. You got to get me out of here.
I've got a green Quaker parrot, and I swear, whenever he needs to, he wants to change the water. He's pissed about something. He'll hear go ting ting ting. Ting 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 over and over. I can imagine this laser beagle, dude, guys, come on. Ting 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 ting. Let me out. Come on. Don't let them see me fall apart here. Yeah, then there's this small comic strip called Robo Capers.
Yes.
Now this kind of came out of left field for me. I wasn't aware of this one at all. And it's like a little, you know, little comic strip from a newspaper. Length is like four panels.
Yeah, this is the first appearance of the Robo Capers here. Yeah. Which you'll see a lot more of it as days go on. Because this is made by Lou Stringer.
Why do I know that name?
Well, he started out illustrating fanzines in the 70s and caught the eye of Alan Moore.
Okay.
And Alan Moore encouraged him, as well as Kevin O'Neill, who was the illustrator for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and Dave Gibbons, who illustrated Watchmen.
Mm.
And they got him to pursue it professionally. And so Alan Moore actually introduced him to the Marvel UK staff.
Nice.
And yeah, that's how he got involved here. And he worked on another strip called Tom Thug. And then I'm sure you heard of Combat Colin, which he shows up in a lot of the later UK and in the Action Force, the British G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
He did Combat Colin for that. He still does stuff for that. He worked on Sonic the Hedgehog comics.
Oh, well, okay.
Doctor Who magazine, which he had the Daft Dimension strip in that.
Nice.
And he's still very active and sells his original artwork online.
Very cool. Yeah,
like, actually, still very often. So,
and you look at this, it very much does look like fanzine art. Heavy lines, you know, there's not a lot done in the backgrounds, but the characters are very, I don't know, very cartoonish. But it was, you know, fun little comic.
Well, as this goes on, eventually, like, it starts doing crossovers with the Transformers comic itself.
Nice.
And if I recall correctly, at some point, Simon Furman actually hijacks the strip. Yeah, there's like a whole little thing with that. We'll get to that, though.
I'm sure it'll come eventually.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's, you know, next page is there's always great little adverts about things and puzzles and the keys for the word find and stuff. And also, this is one I think you and I and also Ed and I talk about these robot books. You find it like Scholastic book fairs and stuff. There's one
exactly.
of these looking things. 50 facts about robots. I know you found a picture of this one.
Yeah, I found a picture and I looked up the author. Mark Lambert is his name. And he did a lot of light reading topics like book fair type stuff about UFOs and Ice Age animals and stuff like that. Little, you know, the picture books with information in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this book online and the prices for it range from like $9 to $150. So it depends on how crazy you are for this. But
I mean, yeah.
Oddly enough, as I looked up this author,
mm-hmm.
There's another Mark Lambert that was like locked in. I don't know if it's the same guy or if it, you know, they just kind of grouped him in because of the name.
Mm-hmm.
But on several sites, they had him tied in with a book and a podcast called Cop Talk, which was a true crime podcast that ran from 2010 to 2014, which he ran with his brother Jim, and they were both policemen in California.
Huh.
So you might want to look that up. And I mean,
yeah, who knows?
I couldn't see anything else that really connected. These are the same guys, but
I mean,
all these book sites had them connected.
It's a fairly common name, so it could be two different people, but who knows?
Right.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. But yeah, I always love those books. They had these very, I don't know, they're, I would say like the 70s, early 80s science fiction, almost like watercolor, you know, really nice illustrations. Something I would say the same kind of coloring as is in the UK Transformers.
Oh,
Nice,
yeah.
nice lines, nice coloring. And it was just really neat robot ideas, the things that are more science fiction than they are science fact.
Yeah, I was going to say, if this is the same guy, then he was just right on the cusp of RoboCop. I mean, he was almost, he was like
he
one
perfect.
degree of separation from RoboCop.
Yeah. Robots, cops. I can put it together somehow. I can't quite fit it together, though.
Who's that? OCP stole the idea from him.
Well, they probably stole the idea and killed whoever had it.
Yep.
Yep.
How's he doing? Where is he now?
he's in some warehouse in the cement under Detroit. Or sorry,
right?
New Detroit.
New Detroit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, fun little, like, you know, letters and keys and stuff in this, like it's kind of common fare at this point.
Yeah, they give you a lot to do. There's a lot of activities in these comics. We got the story and then get out.
It's almost like an activity book more than it's a comic,
right?
But man, I would love if they had. I know they came on cheaper paper or whatnot, you know, whatever it is, in the UK Transformers comics than we got in the American ones, but the quality of the actual art in the book, so much better. This
yeah
it's fantastic.
The paper was thinner, it felt more fragile, but the printing quality on it was better, so it was like a weird balance. Whereas you know, ours were playing on they're on newsprint and you couldn't get quite as many colors on it, but it was a little sturdier. So yeah, because I always, when I handle my UK comics, I always like feel like I should have like white gloves on, and you know,
yeah,
like it's
they actually
a museum piece.
They kind of feel like whenever you get a sales flyer in for like a local drugstore or a Target or something, you know, that kind of really thin newsprint
Oh
kind of
yeah,
paper.
they reminded me of like the tabloids, like the
That's a
Inquirer.
good way, yeah. Actually,
Yeah.
that's pretty spot on, I think. When we returned to the Chromabots, and
Oh
this
yeah.
took a weird turn that I did not expect at all.
It got a little more serious, it seems.
It did, and Transmute went from it went from, you know, kind of creeper guy, stranger danger guy to oh, he's a good dude now.
Yeah, he like picked a hobo disguise. You know, this guy, he was kind of gets the first pretender.
He kind of does actually. So yeah, well, more the pretender, like the Japanese shows, like Master Force.
If they had a homeless one, Master
Are
Force.
the Decepticons back? What? Eat your can of beans. So he starts off flying, and yeah, you explain that briefly that the Crobots are chromium men, and is and particularly his transmutes and metallic compounds produce the most beautiful effect. But essentially, he's blingy; he shines in the sun.
He's a blingy T-1000.
He kind of is. He
Yeah.
looks like actually, he looks like something from a like a I don't know, like the Saiyan shows, the Power Rangers style shows.
Oh yeah, the Sentais. Yeah.
Sentai, not Saiyan.
Yeah,
Jesus, that's
Super
Dragon Ball.
Sentai. And
Yeah, Sentai.
I'm kind of catching like a Mighty Orbots vibe from him.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Well, I mean,
Yeah.
obviously, because he can do anything. He can, as we'll see in the next issue, he can, be smaller too. But
Yeah, because I guess he's full size, like he's a full size human, whereas I guess Micros or
Micros.
yeah, he's a small one. That's why,
Yeah.
you know, he fits in a grocery bag.
Has to make the baklava. So it seems he can telepathically track Micros also, which it'd be really cool if Micros been like, hey man, by the way, there's other guys and they can track me down just by where I'm at. So this shopping bag really isn't necessary. But
And
he was
oh,
that?
go ahead.
No, he just like lands and tells the kid, hey, and Micros is like, hey, it's cool. We're friends. Don't be scared
Right.
of this guy. And like, well, why didn't you say anything the first time? So, and then
It's all
Transmute.
those dramatic pauses they keep making in their
It is.
dialogue.
This comic, this little mini comic in this book, so much paneling is used for such little story. It crawls by.
They pause like a telenovela.
They really do.
There'd be a lot of dramatic music, like in between each sentence.
And when my wife and I went down, or our honeymoon, we went down to some Mexico for like a resort down there in the Yucatan. That was a great freaking time. But anyways, so what, as you do, because there's free drinks and food and stuff here and there. So we get a hit it a little hard one night at dinner, and so we kind of took a lazy day in. And man, those telenovelas are great. I had such a good time watching Mexican soap operas. No idea what was going on, but it didn't matter because it
I can
was
say they
so.
didn't have it in English, so I know you're
Oh,
just like
I'm
guessing.
just like I'm making up my own story. Like, well, obviously that's the baby daddy, and that's the pool boy, and we're trying to make up what we figured out. I took French in high school, and that was 100 years ago at this point. So I don't even know any Spanish. So here we
You
are.
can
I can.
tell who's cheating on whom
Oh
on there.
yeah, and
Yeah.
I know that's a baños, and we're good.
Baños.
Man, my wife got so pissed off me. I'm like, so when I land and get out of the plane, who do I say baños to? She don't say that. Just let me talk. Don't say anything. You say you wave and say hi to the white guy, and that's good enough.
They knew.
They knew. They
Yeah,
see the mark. But yeah, you get a Secret Wars advert. They are
yeah,
pimping Secret Wars.
it's coming out like right after this, like later the same month. But I didn't realize like Secret Wars, it didn't seem like it was that soon, because I mean, by the time they get to Circuit Breaker, it's Secret Wars 2. So they must have done those like almost back to back.
Probably so. I remember back years ago, and I was going to a summer camp, back in Pensacola. You know, I was like, God, I don't know. I was probably like 8 or 9, and I had we bring our like our Transformers to the summer camp every day. We put them in our lunchbox. It's actually how I lost Swindle one time, but Swindle got away from me. But yeah, so
He
we were
ran
there
off a
was
wind charger.
yeah, right. There was a kid talking about the black suit Spider-Man. Like he found a marble in this ship. He didn't know what was going on. I guess he probably read his brother's comic or something. Didn't understand what was going on with all that. So yeah, this whole time period, yeah, I feel like there was like a, I don't know, like this whole jam of all these stories coming out all at once. So
Yeah. Well,
maybe
there's a
so.
lot of rebranding going on under Shooter,
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Secret Wars was his baby. So
Yeah, that's that mess of a book.
I bet he was fun in the sandbox as a kid with like just
Oh.
bring all the toy, bring Godzilla, bring it. We're getting everybody in here.
I mean, I was talking to a friend on the other day on like, talking about how, Secret Wars is like the junk drawer of Marvel superheroes. It's like it's like, all right, who we have? Who's a B and C lister we can just throw in there also?
Oh yeah. I
And
mean, then you got like the first like I guess dedicated Marvel toy line out of
yeah.
it. Yeah, so he was cross marketing. I think they kind of saw what George Lucas was doing with Star Wars and said, we got to get in on that.
Which is not a bad thing. And like, this is around the same time as Crisis on Infinite Earths came out. DC
Yeah.
was kind of close to the same time. So there's so much going on. I was talking to someone else about this. He's been working in the comic industry for years. And like, I th for the word is that Shooter and them found out about Crisis coming out. And so they rushed to get something out there. This is probably like Secret Wars, or they heard about it. They were trying to get it all up for the first one to do it. So
Yeah.
there's a lot of competition right there also. So yeah.
Oh yeah, they always tried to beat each other to punch.
Oh
Like
yeah.
GoBots and Transformers. It was always a race.
GoBots. That
Yeah.
terrible line. Who cares about that? I mean, obviously Transformers came out first, right?
We
Yeah.
shall see.
Yeah. We shall
So,
see,
oh, and going back to
Megatron.
Chromebots real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, Transmute just like without consent just scans Dudley's whole brain
His
and
psionic
then
scans
drafts
him.
him into their back, their struggle. It's like,
He's like, I just did a psionic scan on you, and I know you can be trusted. Dudley's like, what? Okay.
there's probably not a whole lot in Dudley's brain to scan, so.
He hasn't hit puberty yet, probably not.
Yeah, so.
It's pretty much robots and comic books at this
But
point.
yeah, that was just kind of out of the blue, and it's like, well, you could have done that earlier when you were a homeless guy.
Hey, little boy, I know you got a little robot in your pocket.
Right?
Yeah,
Come here, I want to talk to you behind this tree.
got this van over here. It's really a
No.
spaceship, but it looks like a white panel van. The
We had enough of that in Man of Iron.
oh, you're not wrong at all. The Mirage. Oh my gosh.
Oh, and Jazz, here, hop on
Jazz the
in.
stalker.
Yeah, I'll let you drive me, Locke.
That's right. Mom. Sammy.
Oh, and speaking of which, we have made a grievous error.
Oh, please, by
Okay,
all means.
we've been looking at the artist listing on here, and it says like Mike Collins art, and it'll say like John Ridgway art, but they have not been doing the colors.
Who's been doing the colors then?
Gina Hart has been the colorist since like Man of Iron and all the British side of things. Like all these wonderful colors we're enjoying is Gina Hart's work.
I was gonna say it's pretty unusual for a artist like the line artist to do all the coloring also, because they're working
Yeah,
on certain
so
things.
if you look,
Gina?
it's on there. They have colors listed, but it's like way down by the editor. So that's how we were missing it. We weren't really looking past the lettering. But yeah, Hart's listed. That was Gina Hart, and she's been doing color work for the UK comics since Man of Iron. She's responsible for Megatron resembling his box art, which is why you'll see him repeatedly with a gold chest. Because if you look at the box art, he kind of has like a yellowish tint.
Yeah, which is
So I
probably
guess it was reflecting whatever they were
yeah,
using.
but I kind of wondered that because I was looking at the issue, I'm looking at his chest and it looks a little gold, like slightly like it's like a silver gold kind of tint. It's like right in between. I'm
Yeah,
like,
and that's what they're
what?
going for from the box art.
Okay, well, man,
So,
Honestly, good on them for trying so hard to stay true to the actual, colors.
Yeah, so she was using the box art as her guide for a lot of the stuff. But she's also known for her work on Rupert Bear and 2000 AD.
Oh,
She did,
nice. Once
yeah, she
again.
did a lot of color work in conjunction with John Ridgway. And she worked on Judge Dredd, Rogue
Nice.
Trooper, Bad Company, Maniac Five, and Doctor Who graphic novels.
So it all comes back to 2080 at the end, every time.
Yeah. And she also worked on Transformers UK until Target 2006.
Oh, okay.
So
Okay.
she did a lot of work for them. And yeah, her colors are really great. So.
It does. It has gradients that are nice. I mean, like, you're looking at a picture of Braun, and there is
Yeah.
gradients of orange blending into the yellow, and it's just a really nice job. It's like she didn't fight the shading from the inker and the penciler. She like used it. She accentuated it, which is nice. Sometimes
Yeah,
like
she mixed her tones
yes,
to go
like
right along with the shading
and
and
I
the ink.
get that I give Yamtov a lot of crap because he's using like five colors, but I don't know if some people just have this kind of knack to be able to do this sort of this gradient shading,
Well, and
and
you couldn't do this in the American comics because of
no.
the newsprint paper they used. It was a completely different printing process.
Yeah, it's too bad. This is.
And it's funny though, if you look at the Machine Man comic coming out later, did you see who
Oh.
was doing the colors on that?
Yep. Which is why I entered his name.
Say
I know
it three
exactly.
times or
I
he'll
can look at.
appear.
What's that?
If you say it three times, he'll appear.
No, I don't want to. He's probably not with us anymore, and I don't want to see that. I don't know.
He's still around.
He might be, yeah. But then again, I don't want to actually have to explain myself why I hate his coloring so much. That'd be pretty awkward. So no one
Because you
uttered his
don't get
name.
it, man.
I do. I had use what I had. Let's see. It's not even like looking at the like we got a Script Furman, Art Collins, letters, Starkings, colors, heart. There it is.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I guess they kind of pushed it down the line a little. I would have thought the colors are pretty important, but what do I know?
Maybe the extra U threw us off.
Yeah, maybe so. Anyways, Cran does the editor is the editor. So okay, I don't know who that is. Anyways, this thing starts out like it's part three, Crime and Punishment. It starts out with Braun is going. He's going to ape on all of the Autobots. He's taken down Prowl. He's taken on Gears. There's a red Sunstreaker behind him also.
He slapped the yellow off of him.
He did. I kind of wonder when I saw this if someone had a like some of the Diaclone figures and or say had pictures of the Diaclone,
I
Sunstreaker. I'm like,
think that's
oh,
what that was
probably
because
not.
originally he was red.
Yeah, he was. And
Yeah.
then Wind Charger, poor Wind Charger, just because the devil
Oh,
is
he's got the sad Windcharger eyes back there.
he does. He really does.
They managed to make that visor, frown.
He did.
And
Yeah,
did you see
so
who's here that shouldn't be here?
I see one character that's gonna show up in a second, but what who are you talking about?
I thought Gears shouldn't be here. He's still recovering from his
That's a good
damage
point.
from
That's where the
helping
continuity error
Spider-Man
is you're talking about.
rescue. Yeah. So, I mean, you got two options here because he's in two panels. So Gears is definitely meant to be in these panels.
Yeah.
So either, Gears got better and then Braun put him back in traction, or it was an error. And I kind of like to think that maybe that's what happened is he got better. They can come on, Gears. We need your help real quick. And he didn't even get to tell him about, the Decepticons got the fuel formula.
Nah, no
So,
reason to.
and then Braun just put him right back into the repair bay.
With his robot claw arms, bam.
Because, Optimus isn't much to really listen to his troops in this comic.
Oh, he's terrible at this.
He tells them to shut up a lot.
He tells people who have really good information to shut up.
Yeah, hold on. I'm watching my stories,
He is really he's bringing forth some of that Ultra Magnus energy. I don't have time for that right now.
Yeah.
And man, he so Braun beats the heck out of all of the Autobots. He's like, ah, the Autobots have fallen. None can challenge the might of Braun.
Oh, yeah, he uppercuts Prowl.
Oh man, yeah, Prowl's
Yeah.
on the ground.
And I mean, I'm assuming that Bumblebee got some too, because he's kind of in the background on the second panel, just
Oh yeah,
kind
he
of
is, isn't he?
sitting there. He's not even like standing up, or you know, he's kind of short, so maybe not. But
He's right standing there, like, man, this flap where my head is going to snap right off. I'm just going to lay down.
yeah, he just taps out. He didn't even get hit. Like,
Yeah, but we have a like little cameo by a later season two Autobot.
well, yeah, this is his intro.
Yeah, this is his intro to the it's kind of early though, I would think, for Red Alert, but here he is. He's
It was, but it works with the comic.
it does.
Well,
Which
and I, if you don't mind me
by all
getting
means.
ahead a little bit, because this happened in the US comics, but when they introduced like Smokescreen and Inferno and all those guys, they left Red Alert out. Yeah.
So it actually kind
When
of
we
works
get to
out like
that,
that.
watch, and I mean, you can even go look at the US comic. They left Red Alert out, so it works. It doesn't interrupt the continuity.
Well, there you go. See, they screwed up one continuity almost, and they made up for the next one.
Came out smelling like a rose.
We're like a Red Alert.
And this was in
Again,
85 when this was being printed, so
that's true. But
yeah,
they were
so
still, they hadn't even brought in like Insecticons yet. Like
right.
nothing.
And oddly enough, Red Alert is pretty on model, whereas, you know, Sideswipe's kind of been like on and off.
A Red Alert looks very much like the Sunbow model. That's really, really good. Besides the fact that, you know, they draw the panels for his legs and as a robot mode, it looks really nice. You can almost see the chrome on the toes.
And this is not the Sunbow Red Alert.
But it looks a lot more like that
Oh, I
than.
meant personality wise.
Oh yeah, no.
Because he totally sucker punches Braun and takes him
He
down.
cold cocks Braun, knocks him down, and like then you know he, all you see is this big like you know this Batman the old live action series bam panel, and
Oh, yeah.
he's on the ground, and
I
like
mean, Sunbow Red Alert would have just whined about it and thought that Braun was going to take his job.
yeah, you
Yeah.
wouldn't understand me. So Ratchet in his very toy centric mode walks up, is like, hey, well done. And then he's like, he goes over and hits Braun with a neural tranquilizer,
Yeah.
which gives another big shock and basically tases him.
And he says he doesn't know what it'll do.
This
So
is
he's
this like
using like
this is
experimental treatments.
this is this is totally oh gosh. The Autobot mad scientist,
Wheeljack.
Wheeljack. This is a
Yeah.
Wheeljack move here.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I don't know what this does, but let's just try
Tiny
it.
brains.
Right? Yeah.
just like real dinosaurs. Oh
Yeah, and
man.
Optimus was
So
like, well, we had no choice but to, you know, electrocute him after he was already knocked out. So
yeah. And like, you know, there Optimus Prime picks up Brawn. And just like he like kind of like he baby carries him like a little kid
yeah.
out of the downtown area of St. Petersburg. It's like, we better get out of here before all the authorities show up. We don't want to have to deal with them. Leaves downtown St. Petersburg like a wreck.
Oh yeah, he ditched because the cops are on their way. I mean, and it didn't give any information or anything. I mean, there's
Nothing.
just a pile of burning cars all the way down the street. All the storefronts are wrecked.
Yeah. And there's a whole parking lot full of wrecked cars.
No wonder no one in the comics likes Transformers, no matter what side they're on. They're all mad at them.
Circuit Breaker is actually there in St. Petersburg. She was at a tanning salon, like, all robots must die.
Look at this. What? That's probably, you know, later we'll get into the Black Rock oil
Yeah.
platform. It's got weapons on it. This kind of stuff is why it has it on.
Oh yeah.
They're armed.
100%. This is why. 100% why. Okay, not to not it's not the same continuity, I know, but this is one of the things I really liked about the later on Transformers movies. They weren't great by any means, but like there was, I think it was it may have been Age of Extinction, where they basically have a they have a bounty on any Transformer because they
Yeah.
have a Remember Chicago signs up. That was a really cool touch, very dark touch, and
Yeah, some
that's
people don't forgive and forget.
no. We certainly don't hear. But so yeah, that was a really cool thing, you know, to have that with Blackrock coming in. It makes a lot of sense in the grand scheme of things, building world building here as we were.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just Optimus Prime is this just sweet, like, I got you, Brawn. And like people are screaming, they're panicking behind him, and they all walk out. They don't transform. They all walk out of St. Petersburg.
He's nice to Braun because he's not talking.
Yeah.
Because everyone that talks, he tells them to shut up.
Braun, you're my favorite. You don't talk. So back at the Decepticons, Starscream is being pursued by Thundercrack and Skywarp. And Megatron is big mad. He's on there proclaiming that his crimes against his fellow Decepticon Ravage, and he is sentenced to utter destruction. He is big mad, which,
hey, you don't mess with somebody's cat.
No, apparently not.
You hurt somebody's pet, and they are coming after you.
And then my wife, someone messed with our cat. But, yeah, though Thundercracker makes Sonic Boom, you know, like he does. It was the funny thing. I use this book a lot for to get some kind of like goofs and errors and stuff like this. Got it years ago. Nice little book. A lot of cool information in it. Notable things he says. Thundercracker uses a Sonic Boom. I'm like, dude, he's already done that. That's his whole thing. He did that.
Yeah, they really like using their powers in the comic.
They
showcase them.
Yeah.
Which we may have gotten it just a couple times in Sunbow, but not as much as in the comic.
Yeah. But so he does a Sonic Boom, and like Skywarp uses his ability to come up in front of Starscream, starting firing on him.
Yeah, he teleports.
Yeah,
they couldn't catch him because Starscream's the fastest seeker. So
yeah,
they had to use their little bag of tricks to get him down.
And he fires on, knocks Starscream out of the sky, and Starscream goes and crash lands, and they kind of transform midair, and Megatron comes out of like a Thundercracker's cockpit, like he did during during like issue 3 or 4, I think too. I don't know. It's one of the things they've established. He rides in the cockpit, transforms, and he's down there.
And man, Starscream came flaming down like he was just engulfed in flames when they got done with him.
Yeah, and like Megatron's back at him, and it's like he immediately sentences Starscream to obliteration beyond all possibility of reanimation. I mean, he is freaking going all out. He is scorched earth on Starscream.
Well, and think about it, he called it, because I mean, who's the number one reanimator run among Transformers?
Oh, I was going to say the same thing actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He.
I can't have you come back again and again.
And again.
Starscream's like, hey, hold on. He pulls a reverse Uno card. He's like, hold up. I demand a trial by combat.
Yeah, he pulls a Tyrion Lannister.
He does. And like Megatron's like going, well, and like Thundercracker and Skywarp are like, well, you know, he's not wrong. I mean, I do it too. Like, all right, fine.
Megatron, you know, it shows that there is some sway. Megatron's just not like a demagogue where he doesn't listen to anyone. He actually cares somewhat about what his troops say and do and what they think.
Yeah, Megatron is being written as kind of a hothead, but he can be reasoned with, which I think comes into play later as we go into a Megatron story in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes more unhinged, but Megatron's toy head or his robot head here is very toy accurate. And it's like he's got this the back of the gun slope on the back of the head.
Yeah, the gun kibble.
Collins did a really good job of going and accentuating all the robot forms. I mean, obviously Brawn and Gears and Windcharger, they're very simplistic, like the toy is. But I mean, Megatron, you can see all the little panels and like slopes behind the head and whatnot.
Well, the forehead crown is very prominent.
Oh, it was very prominent. Oh, they're so prominent. I think it was in this issue, maybe in the next one. There's a point where I think there's supposed to be smoke in one side of the crown, shiny. It almost looks like there's an afro on the side of the head. Because it's all swirly, but it doesn't show on the side of the head. It was really a weird
I think that's on upcoming page.
Yeah. It didn't we'll get into that. So it was just nice seeing that very, very toy accurate head. But back in the arc, again, we're back there again. It jumps back and forth. Furman's really big about jumping back and forth a lot with the story, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Braun seems to have no memory of what he did and doesn't know why he's being held.
Yeah, so the experimental treatment worked.
Yeah.
So
Good job, Wheeljack
guess,
and Ratchet.
yeah, Ratchet. Yeah, good on Ratchet.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what this is going to do, but I'll do it anyways. And Ratchet's trying to figure out, you know, things out. He really doesn't have a clear solution because he doesn't know how it worked or if it did work or if Ron's just saying this or whatever.
Yeah, it
This is.
might have cured him.
Yeah, we don't. And Optimus is like, what do you mean, might have? You need to give me clear answers. And yeah, that's when Mirage is like, hey, Optimus, I got to talk to you. But Optimus Prime's like, no, not right now. You just do your thing, whatever you need to work on, do it. And he's like, no, seriously, dude, listen to me. I have something very important to tell you.
He just doesn't care about anything that Mirage has to say
No,
until
and
Mirage
Mirage is,
corners him.
yeah, he's like, he's the redheaded stepchild all of a sudden.
You again? What now?
And
Stop
Mirage
talking to
has
me
like,
about Minecraft. No.
well, let's go talk about Roblox. Honestly, the faces on like Mirage, on Megatron, on Starscream, they are starting to get that very UK feel of being very almost like a human, but they have any human features on the like chin and mouth and such with, you know,
Right.
whatever visor or whatever they have.
The parts that would move.
Yeah. Like if
Yeah.
you were watching, they would, the mouth would move. It looks like almost like you're having, you know, a person under a mask kind of thing. But and I know there's been a lot of, you know, derisiveness or divisiveness through the years about that kind of style. I like it because you're able to give a lot of expression where you couldn't usually in the past.
Right.
Especially Megatron. I mean, Megatron, they give him a very much a, him and Starscream, actually, they do this both a bit. They have, you know, like in the old, you know, Spider-Man comics, that we give, you know, the Green Goblin this very pointed chin, very high cheekbones, a very almost like a longer face. They did the same thing to him here and Starscream, except
Yeah, I was saying they got
Starscream.
fashion model cheekbones.
They do. But that's also a very stark villain kind of look. I really dig it.
Yeah, it
Anyway,
looks
sorry about
great.
that. My little side tangent there. But yeah, so Optimus finally listens to Mirage. They don't give a hint of what's going on here yet with the
They don't
Mirage.
let us listen to Mirage, though.
Yeah. Optimus Prime's like, no. This is my turn to listen to him. Y'all, next panel. It was one of those things that it was nice to hide that little, you know, what was coming up thing. But we're, you know, led to believe that something happened whenever Braun got shocked.
Right, like it did something to Mirage as well, who was working with Braun. So
yeah. So we didn't see that effect. But yeah, so that's
OSHA could have stopped this whole situation.
Yeah. Yeah, in back of the Decepticon headquarters, man, Megatron's watching like old videotapes about about, you know, these battles to the death, these trial by combat.
Yeah, he's watching home movies.
He kind of is. There's
Yeah.
two Decepticons. Like one was a traitor. I can't remember the other one. They both were like guilty of something.
Yeah, one was a rebel and one was a traitor.
Yeah, rebel and traitor. So one his name is Tornado. The other one's Earthquake. Guess what they do? Yeah. Guess what their powers are. So, you know, he watches this video and it's a pretty brutal fight too. These two go at it until they both die.
Yeah, they wreck each other, and they both die. None of them survive. So really, Megatron's in the back room watching snuff films.
He totally is.
Yeah.
This is completely a Decepticon snuff film kind of thing to do. So yeah, he's like looking at thinking like, well, you know, that will be a great solution if they both kill each other off. But just in case, I've got to hedge my bet a little bit here.
Well, he's trying to figure out, like, okay, well, who can we send to fight
Yeah.
Starscream that will die too?
Yeah.
Like,
And Ravage is like, hey, boss. Yeah, so I heard something.
I was watching some TV.
Yeah. Ravage is quickly being the MVP of this story arc. I mean, he's carried the story.
Yeah, he has.
Even like, into the next issues, his very important part. He's like, look, I heard something's going on with Braun, so let's give Optimus Prime a call and see if we want to work together on this. We can come to a common solution. If it doesn't work out, we can take care of things. So Megatron calls Optimus Prime of the Ark. He's like, Optimus Prime, hey, look, you have a problem. I have a problem. I have a solution. And knowing that,
forget about it.
Yeah, knowing that Braun would jump at the opportunity to clear his name and like look good in front of Optimus Prime again. And Optimus realizes this. He's like, man, you only see the gears working his head, like, okay, I know this is a trap. But because I'm such a nice guy, I've got to give him the chance to say yay or nay. So, of course, he
And
tells Brock.
Megatron seems to have a better grasp of the psychology of the Autobots than Optimus does.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And, yeah, so that's what we have. We have, you know, of course, Braun jumps up and says, yes, I'll do it. Whatever. I want to look
Yeah,
good.
He wants to redeem himself.
Yeah, he wants to look good in front of, you know, Optimus Prime again. So, and once
I
again,
goofed.
this whole sequence, there's this back to color again. Megatron's like chin has gotten longer and pointier.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a comic book villain chin.
Oh, yeah, he's got like Mephisto chin.
Oh, he totally does. I really like that. You can tell these people have their techniques, and it shows really well with this.
And the toy kind of had that kind of look to it too on the face.
A little bit. Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, a little lump right here. But yeah, it was very accentuated in this. So yeah, of course they have a whole thing set up. He's like, all right, look, I'll do it. There's two conditions. And Megatron's like, yes, I got this. It has to be remote, which makes sense. They don't want to hurt anyone else.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, they want to go and he says we can have like a watcher, like someone who can like kind of look after, you know, if something happens, we can, you know, they can jump in and, you know, kind of call it whatever. They'll be
yeah,
next.
they want to make sure it's done fairly.
Yeah, and this is where Optimus Prime shows he's kind of thinking a little, you know, a little more deviously than he's putting out, because he knows there's something going on with the Mirage. They can help out. It's very
Yeah,
very
whatever
hidden
Mirage's
area.
secret is, it's kind of their ace in a hole, apparently.
Yeah. It's their trump card, if you will. It's one of those things where it almost feels like Heavy Metal War, where, you know, Decepticons are all like, hey, we're gonna do all these things and we're gonna give them all their powers, we're gonna let them cheat, and the Autobots should know what's going on. But at least in this, they do realize there's something up and they're gonna use Mirage. Mirage is like also less creepy now. I guess he's not sneaking around little kids' bedrooms at night or windows, or
I think everyone that doesn't do that is less creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, he good way to redeem himself right here. Kind of.
He needs this as much as Braun does.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But we have this. This is after this whole thing happens. They work out the deal. It goes into the next issue. So, but we have this get snap happy win a Kodak disc camera. So this is kind of a neat thing. They really, the wording of this is kind of rough. It made it sound like they're inviting kids to paint the side of their house.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a side of a house, like a silhouette of a short side of a house with old chimney and stuff at the top. But the way the thing reads, like, oh, okay, send pictures of your painted house. No, don't do that.
Yeah, it sounds like they're inviting kids to do graffiti.
Yeah, yeah, I was
which that's
that
what I did. Instead of drawing in the house, I just went and like
painted the side of the house. Makes sense.
Yeah, the neighbors are mad.
At least it wasn't your house.
Yeah. No, that'd be like work.
Yeah.
Paint my own house. Ugh.
Oh, actually, yeah. There also is another ad for the Time Warrior watch.
Yes, this is the one we were promised.
Yes.
And I guess I was expecting the next issue, but it's in this one.
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of digging on this too. Because, okay. Well, issue 13, Anthony Temple said we'd get this. And it's a really nice looking ad. We never saw this ad in the U.S. at all. We just got the little insert that came with the toys, you know, with the reinforcements from Cybertron.
Yeah.
So on this, and I mean, it's well drawn. And the colors are great in it. But it was £4.49, I guess. So basically, in the 50 pence was for postage. So it was really like $3.99.
Yeah.
So I was looking at, you know, our reinforcements from Cybertron flyer, and they charged us $10 for this thing.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah. And 6 robot points.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
this
theirs
is, two,
is
right?
£4 and 4 robot points. So I had to do a little digging because, you know, I love the inflation calculators and all that.
Yeah.
So I looked at the exchange rate in 1985 between the British pound and the US dollar.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, well, first of all, we're spoiled for delivery also, because it says 28 days to get it
It's not
delivered.
Amazon,
It's like,
kids.
yeah. So nowadays we're really spoiled, but they got a way better deal than we did because $10 six robot points. And then the exchange rate for the British pound in April of 1985, when this came out, it hit a historic low of $1.05 to a pound. So it's almost a 1-for-1. So they saved $6 and 2 robot points on it.
There's no reason for it to be this expensive. Or this expensive for us.
And then to adjust it for inflation, so we can get an idea now, it was the equivalent of $30 if you're in the U.S. for the Time Warrior watch.
Yeah.
But in the U.K., you'd pay $12.50 for it.
Which, considering what it is, it's still a little overpriced, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, could you imagine if we had paid $30 for a little digital watch, and then you're, if you're in the U.K., you got it for $12.
Yeah. Nope.
And the pound still has not recovered from that dip completely.
No, it's honestly, one of the strong points of the American dollar is it's kind of worked its way into being, you know, pretty much the basis of most all other currencies around the world. So,
and that's actually what caused the pound to tumble, was the dollar strengthened.
Yeah,
I've dug through several economic pages on this to see what was the deal with it, and yeah, the U.S. dollar strengthened and it dropped the pound from. I guess in 1980, it was $2.40 for 1 pound and dropped it all the way down to $1.05. So it was like, it was a huge dip.
Hmm. Yeah. Remember when we were collecting at earlier points, the yen was so upside down. Also, we used to be able to get Japanese stuff for dirt cheap.
Oh, yeah. In the mid 90s, especially late 90s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That, all that Beast Wars 2 stuff.
Oh, God. If you found a reliable person to order from, you can get that, you know, stuff for like the price that they have on like a deluxe nowadays in stores.
Yeah.
Like, you can pretty much get a 2-pack from Beast Wars in the second stuff. Yeah. It's just the way things change. They've rectified the yen a lot now. So it's closer, but still. Anyways. Yeah. So like I said, great art. Honestly, if you looked at the, reinforcements from Cybertron, little booklet, which I've got a few of them around here, and you do as well. It looked terrible. That was like the consolation prize. Like, I can't afford to get one of the Omnibots, so I'll get one of this guy.
Oh, yeah. And I think it was actually more expensive than the Omnibots. Let me see. I got it right here. So it was, yeah, Omnibots were $5 and 4 robot points each.
God, there's no reason for that.
So the digital watch, you know, you press the chin and it opens up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like worth 2 Omnibots.
Nope.
And I mean, this thing is like incredibly rare to find in like working condition now. Like, to find it mint, that's, you know, we looked it up. It was like, what, $500 to $1,000?
Yeah. It's like, I guess if you took your battery out back then and put it back in a box so it didn't like corrode inside the battery.
Or I think that's what happened to a lot of them, is they never took the battery out and it corroded it and ruined the electronics.
It's what we have with a lot of older Transformers now, you know, the ones that have like automated things like, you know, Omega Supreme and like Trypticon and things like
Trypticon. I've opened up Trypticon Tales and found like exploded C batteries in there.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, D these batteries one of them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's just like one of the things that kind of makes it special, but I don't know, kind of for the wrong reason. Because people didn't think ahead. Like, we didn't think in like 40 years we'd be like looking at these again or looking for them.
Oh, but none of this stuff was meant to be gone. Or these comics, the toys, nobody thought they'd still be talking about them now.
Yeah.
This was, you know, make the money now and go on with it. Because, you know, they were just running with it, whatever was trendy.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, what? I feel like people nowadays they get current Transformers, and they get mad that the plastic yellows or whatever after like a short period of time, and it's you know, it's kind of a crappy thing to happen when we have toys that are 40 years old that are still looking pretty sharp. It was just they were just using whatever they had around. I mean, we've talked before about the fact that the reason they used so much diecast metal back then is because the oil crisis.
Yeah, the plastic got real expensive.
Yeah, diecast metal. I mean, you can go to any store, like any kind of like little corner store, and get like a 5-pack of cars that were pretty much all metal for like a couple bucks.
Yeah, it was cheap.
Yeah.
And really, it wasn't until I want to say the early 2000s with, you know, the war on terror and all that, that metal prices got expensive.
I mean, it's kind of like how things were. And I'm not, it's not the same thing. I get it, because it's a different time frame. But how at the during when we got into World War II, we were scrapping every little bit of metal we had, scrap metal, you know, of course, nylons for parachutes and things like that. When we get in the war on terror, those prices, because people are now thinking like, well, if they want this metal, they're going to have to pay a little more now.
Right.
It's kind of for different reasons, but yeah, the same kind of thing. There's plenty of supply, but they made it seem as much like it wasn't. Anyways, I'll get off that soapbox. But we get back into the last issue, of last page of this issue. Really great choice of writing for the end of this. Megatron tells Ravage what he do what he must do. Do what he must do if Starscream wins, and Optimus tells Mirage to use what his secret is to good use. And so there's this big, you know, splash with like all the lines coming out from the center, like there's a big action scene. Braun yells for the Autobots. Starscream, right on cue, proclaims for myself.
Right.
Perfect. I mean, that was his character in a nutshell.
And so, it really sounds like Megatron's setting it up that, you know, no matter what happens, Starscream's going to lose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, Starscream's going to go down.
Ravage's function is a saboteur. So, I mean.
Yep.
And he hates Starscream right now. So.
Oh, but yeah, he tried to kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, someone tried to kill me like that and gloated about it. I don't know if I could be like nice about it.
You know how it is. You make a cat mad once and they never forget.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, also besides that, you have kind of that building of the animosity. What I like about this issue a lot, you have that building of animosity between different characters. And like you're starting to see relationships how they're building. And you really see what Megatron is good at. He is really good at being like very like, you know, use force and being up front, but he's actually getting more tactical in his thinking. He's thinking like ahead a few steps now.
Yeah.
Which you don't always see out of the cartoon, which is nice.
And he's not directly confronting the threats to his power. He's using his underlings against each other.
Yeah, exactly. He's also getting Ravage in on it.
Yeah.
He's like,
well, that's the one he can trust.
Yeah. Ravage, you're loyal to me. You're one of the smartest ones I have on the side. So here's what I want to do. And Ravage is like, you got a boss.
You know, it's kind of funny when you think about it, because it's like the cassettes and Soundwave were usually the most loyal to Megatron.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the guys from Microchange. It's like they all served together in Microchange. And the Diaclone guys are the ones you got to worry about.
So actually, something else that kind of clued me in here, and I saw him once in this issue, which is why I'm kind of noticed it. You used to, in the Sunbow cartoon, the tapes are always associated with Soundwave. They're like, they're all tied to his hip all the time.
Right.
None of them in this one are. Like Laserbeak, Ravage, Buzzsaw, they're all kind of doing their own thing, and you hardly see Soundwave.
Yeah. I mean, he does this thing with them every once in a while, but yeah, they're not just hanging out inside him all the time.
No, he's in the background of one panel in this issue. That's the only time I saw him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of telling.
I think the Sunbow cartoon was really just playing up the play pattern of Soundwave with ejecting the cassettes.
Whereas this would really get into the personality of them and like make them their own robot instead of part of Soundwave.
Well, so. And it's harder to, I guess, illustrate the cool factor of them jumping out of his chest.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Ooh, we are back to Machine Man.
Speaking of cheap metal.
Yeah. Okay, look, I actually really kind of had fun with the last issue. And this issue just went back. It went back 100%. We're back.
Yeah, it's the crazy mustache and eyebrows, you know. It was like if you dyed Lemmy red, you had, you know, Baron Brimstone.
Yeah.
So that's half of the enjoyment. Yeah, it's just an over-the-top villain.
Yeah, and well, he's also part Wolfman, part off the Vegas Strip magician, and
right,
has a ray gun. But you know, so this the whole thing. I, man, the writing, DeFalco, oof, buddy.
Oh yeah, and did you notice the credits at the bot at the first page?
I looked at them. What did you notice about them?
Okay, they did like some silly credits.
Oh, they
Like it
always
was
do,
like,
yeah.
yeah, Tom DeFalco, writer of renown, Steve Ditko, best artist around, Peter Kirsch, master calligraphic sound, Neil
Yeah.
Yamtov, makes the colors abound.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, and Dennis O'Neill, editor, quite profound. And then Jim Shooter is an extremely tall clown. And then if you look below, Shooter promised revenge. He's like, these guys apparently think I'm too lazy to read the credits these days. Well, just wait, they'll get theirs next issue.
Yeah.
So they've got a little, I
They're
guess,
just trying to see what
comedic
they can get
rivalry
with.
going there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and see, we've got Yamtov and, you know, Denny O'Neill, who was, you know, integral into creating the Transformers. So you've got
Yeah.
like a lot of Transformers guys working on this. You got Shooter, O'Neill, and Yamtov.
Yeah, they do.
So it seems like the further we get in, the I guess the closer the ties to Transformers there are.
Yeah, it's rough still.
Yeah.
But
It's still Machine Man though.
yeah. Oh, DeFalco is introducing Madame Menace, quite possibly the most fascinating female you'll ever meet.
No.
No.
It's always weird when they show these, like, I guess, preview pages. Like, here, it's like a, I guess, a Pulp Fiction type thing where it's all like, it's nonlinear. It's like the pause, like, hey, you'd never guess how I wound up in this situation.
He does actually. That's actually a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Like, well, let's go back a few hours. And yeah, he's still trying to establish a link to his missing arm. But he's attacked by stragglers of the Sinister Satan Squad.
Yeah, these guys are still hanging out. The
You know,
stragglers are still down there causing trouble.
if he landed the helicopter and landed the police helicopter, maybe this could have all been averted.
And I mean, they had a lot more guys in the Sinister Satan Squad than, you know, they really let on. Like, there was like a
Yeah.
couple guys on the roof and then like a couple guys up in the copter. But man, there's like.
I mean, they're mooks still, so
But
yeah,
they
they
got like hallucinogenic gas grenades, like, they got Joker weapons.
Yeah, they do. They do. This is a Bronze Age comic in a very Silver Age wannabe format.
Right, it's very transitional.
Oh yeah, very much
And
so.
I mean, right away he's trying to contact his arm and it's already like he can't get signal. So either he's got really short range or
Something's
whoever stole
happening.
his arm was like moving. They got out of there quick.
Yeah. But actually, we have a really neat diversion in this issue. With they have this comic that tells a rescue of from the submarine Squalus in a
Oh,
y
yes.
using the diving bell of Commander McCann. You did a little more looking into this.
Boy, did I.
Okay.
Okay, so the story we get from it's the Tales from the Transformers Fact Files, which, you know, you expect this to be something Transformers related,
Yeah.
but it's not.
Not at all.
This is actually from a Belgian comic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was actually, well, it was from 1010.
Looking at the art, I can see that.
Yeah, and they translated it into English. You know, for this. But yeah, this is originally from a Belgian and French comic.
That's kind of cool.
And the story they tell us is the submarine Squalus was off Portsmouth, New Hampshire, had electrical fire and water in the machine room, and it sank the submarine to the floor about 240 feet down. Okay. Storm delays the rescue ships, and the USS Sculpin found the sub's distress flares. They'd been down there for over a day. It was like 27 hours. Okay, the diver descends, knocks on the hull of Squalus, and the submariners knock back to let them know they're alive. Okay, so they send the diving bell down, and it says all hands rescue, like all 33 of them are rescued. Okay, and the Squalus is repaired and refitted and renamed the Sailfish. Okay, Sailfish then fought in World War II and notably sank a Japanese ship, killing the enemies, but also U.S. Marines who had been taken prisoner by the Japanese. And those Marines were from the Sculpin, the ship that discovered the Squalus when it sank all those years before. Okay, it's an interesting story, nothing to do with Transformers.
Yeah.
So here's the research I did. I actually researched the actual story.
Oh,
Okay.
okay.
So the sinking of the Squalus happened on the 1st of March, 1939. Okay, according to the Navy's website, it had catastrophic valve failure that caused it to sink.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and it took them 13 hours to rescue the crew.
Oh, just 13 hours.
Yeah, the Squalus was decommissioned on the 15th of November, 1939.
Okay.
And then renamed the Sailfish on the 9th of February, 1940. And then recommissioned on the 15th of May, 1940. Okay. 33 survivors were rescued, but 26 men died when it sank.
Oh, they didn't say that part.
Yeah, they left out that entirely. But yeah, 26 men died, and they think most of them died instantly when they,
pressure,
I guess, had the water come in.
Yeah.
Okay. The Sailfish, which it was renamed, went through the Panama Canal to work in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-World War II.
Yeah.
But it was at Pearl Harbor when it was attacked and survived the attack.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Now we're going to the Sculpin. Okay. This is the Sculpin story. And this is not in here at all. This is what I found out about the Sculpin. Okay. On the 18th of November, 1943, you know, in the midst of World War II, the Sculpin attacked a fast convoy and engaged with the destroyer. Depth charges forced it to rise to the surface and was hit by shells from the destroyer, killing most of its bridge crew. The order was given to abandon ship, and the submarine was scuttled, and the captain, Cromwell, and 11 other men stayed on the sub to guide it down to the bottom of the Pacific to make sure that the enemy forces couldn't get any of the sensitive information that the sub was carrying.
Mm-hmm.
So they went down with the ship. Like, it's like they made a suicide mission to let the 42 guys escape.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't want any of the intelligence to get found by the Japanese. So they took it all the way down to the bottom of the Pacific. Okay. So 42 guys were taken prisoner, and one was immediately thrown overboard as he was severely injured, quote unquote, severely injured. So, okay. One other escaped being thrown overboard by the crew of the destroyer by fighting his way free and rejoining the other captives.
Wow.
Okay. So out of those 41, they were taken to an island called Truk, which is sometimes called Chuck. Yeah.
Okay.
In Micronesia, where they're interrogated. After 10 days, they were loaded on what they said, two carriers for transport to an unofficial Navy prison camp.
Okay.
Okay. The Sailfish torpedoed one of those carriers, the one called the Chuyo, on the 31st of December, 1943. So on, you know, New Year's Eve. And it was carrying 21 of the survivors. They had 20 on one ship and 21 on the other. And only one of the survivors of the Sculpin survived that attack. All right.
Yeah.
So they were taken to a prison camp on Ofuna, where they were questioned again and slowly released to a work camp. Those 21 sailors remained prisoners in a Japanese copper mine at Ashio until it was liberated by Allied forces on the 4th of September, 1945.
Jeez.
Okay. So the book Silent Victory, the U.S. Submarine War Against Japan by Clay Blair from 1975 explains that the Sculpin crew members that were killed by the Sailfish's attack were not the same crew that rescued the Squalus.
Hmm.
Same ship, different crew 4 years later.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, same ship.
Yeah.
So that was the coincidence. And the naval record also made note of the coincidence that it was the Sculpin that saved the Squalus before, and, you know, half of its crew 4 years later was killed. Now, there is a note on the last page of the story that cites raising the Squalus, okay, as like a source of their information. There is no such publication. Nobody knows what they're citing.
Hmm.
So that's a mystery. If that exists, nobody knows where it is or what it is.
Okay, well.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty heavy story, especially with, like, you know, the captain of the Squalus and 11 of his men, you know, taking it down to the bottom, riding it all the way down.
That's pretty dark, but, I mean, that's what you had to do, I guess.
Yeah, it's like Charge of the Light Brigade type
stuff,
you know?
But, and those,
so yeah, that's the true story behind it.
the one in there made it a lot more heroic and less deaths. So it was a nicely drawn comic. It looked really cool. I like to give the description of the diving bell they used to rescue the people in the Squalus. Cool stuff.
Yeah, that was a really neat diagram in there of that.
Yeah.
And it was very novel too, because I mean, this was in 1939 when they rescued those guys, and this is still listed in a lot of places as like the greatest submarine rescue ever.
And okay, they have a we went on our anniversary to up somewhere in the mountains. There is this place called Dahlonega, and in the middle of Dahlonega, they have a diving bell that they used in to locally mine for gold in the waters around there. And that was a small diving bell. That thing is huge. I can't imagine the size of the diving bell they used on this.
It was very small. In fact, it's smaller than what they illustrated here. It was actually far more cramped from what I was able to
Okay, it
look
might
up.
have been about the same size as diving bell then. That's kind of interesting. I mean, it's
Yeah,
big
it
for
was nowhere
looking at
near
it,
as
but I'm
roomy.
sure for what they're doing, it was small.
Yeah, and when I say it took them 13 hours to rescue them, that was after they got the diving bell there. It took them that long to bring the crew up.
Well, considering also pressure sickness and everything too.
Yeah.
But so yeah, well, back to Mishima, unfortunately. He really freaks out at Pamela and asks her about the arm. She's just like, whoa, 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 I don't know who you are, man. You saved me, but what's up? But she says she was like dazed and terrified, because he's trying to find out what happened to the arm. I used it to save you. She's like, I don't know, man. Look, I came down, I was out of it. I was gonna die being thrown out of the helicopter.
She was just no help at all, basically.
No, she does not remember what happened. The police show up and say that he has no time for the police, and they're bumbling bureaucracy. God, I can't say that. Bureaucracy. And he takes off.
He pulls an Optimus. Cops are
You know,
coming. We got a jet.
twice this issue, yeah. He's not Batman. He doesn't even pretend he's Batman.
You'd think he'd at least make a report about his arm.
Yeah, if you see a robot arm, it hits all kinds of powers, it can defy gravity. Let me know.
Well,
Thanks.
he keeps getting framed for stuff, and you think he'd be up
Well,
front with the cop, "Hey, somebody stole my arm, so if my fingerprints show up anywhere
he
or
doesn't trust
circuit
the
prints
police.
or whatever he has."
He was wrongfully accused and wrongfully incarcerated. He trust the police. I kind of understand this.
Yeah.
But he also stops. He's flying away. He's like, he's puzzled by the puzzling sensations around about Pamela. He basically gets around Pamela. He's like, I've got these weird sensations now.
He's going from being a machine boy to a machine man.
Yeah, he's truly becoming a machine man now. Yeah,
Gonna
the
have circuits growing in funny places.
oh, that's awful.
Gonna have to hit the car wash every day now.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm and that's kind of it there for, well, no, it's not that for this section. It goes on to do the Matt the Cat issue, which not a lot happens here again. Matt the Cat and Crobots are they make the most usage end of the scenery and not the dialogue.
Yeah, the plots don't move very quickly.
No, at all. So yeah. So anyways,
They pretty much stop beating up the little droid
and
when
they're
he
like, hey,
mentions
so
food.
can I get you an order? The droid, the little droid who was an anagram of the creator's name or a backwards version of it.
Yeah.
He still wants to bring them food. That's what I got out of this entire thing. Like, oh
And
yeah,
that's pretty much it.
we won't beat you up anymore. You want some
And that's
food? Here
all Hump
you go.
cared about.
Yeah, pretty much. He's like a Garfield from Wish. It's like actually, Bill the Cat and Garfield had a baby. That would be Humph.
Can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so we get to the next page of Machine Man, and luckily the last page of this issue, when you have some thug carrying something under his arm, and he goes into this back room. I guess he knows where the people can like sell like kind of black market goods.
Looks like he's smuggling a fish, like
It
wrapped in brown
does.
paper.
He does. He goes in there, and these guys have like Rorschach from Watchmen.
That's what I put in my notes as reverse Rorschach.
They do. They look like there's really bad reverse Rorschachs. They like these white hoods with like globby ink blots all over their face. But he's like, they're like, hey, we don't have time for you. You can't see the boss. We don't care about what you got. And he's like, let me show you. And there's the scene of Machine Man's arm. He's doing like a hang ten thing. It's like, hey guys,
He was listening to some Dio when
he
he lost
was.
his arm.
And immediately the henchmen are like, "Oh, whoa, okay, hey, we'll let you meet the lady, the boss. So, get ready."
You know,
And
and the fingers are in different positions, so it's like the hand is moving.
it does this, and then it points.
Yeah.
So then we were retreated to like this like kind of cocktail party where at the house of Ms. Sunset Bane. What kind of name is that? Anyways,
Yeah.
I'm assuming that is actually Madame Menace.
Yeah, I'm suspecting that's her as
Yeah.
well.
And that's pretty much it for the issue.
She's hobnobbing with rich people, so yeah, I'm getting a feeling she's kind of like a Selena Kyle.
Yeah, I kind of get that feeling. Or
Yeah.
yeah,
Or maybe Madame Hydra, I don't know.
there you go. Same whole I guess same feel.
I get that vibe from her, yeah.
Yeah. And
And she's
she's
talking
got
to like congressmen and mayors and
yeah,
stuff
that's
there,
right.
so
Hanging out with the elites of the city and stuff.
she's the upper crust.
Yeah. It's the most interesting, was it the most fascinating female you'll ever meet.
Yes, apparently
And
so.
there's next issue I was reading ahead, someone refers to Pamela as some skirt. Or maybe it's this
So,
issue at the end of it. I mean, come on, DeFalco. You don't have to pretend they're like in the 50s and 60s with dialogue like this. You can bring them into the modern era. Some skoit.
yeah,
So
he's definitely got the film noir
yeah,
feel to
that's all he's
things.
got. So yeah, it wasn't a great issue of Machine Man, but it wasn't the worst.
But did you want to save the world is the real question.
Yeah, why not?
Because, you know, we've got a certified Ghostbusters club here we can join.
Did they have this in the American comics? I don't remember.
I have never seen this before in my life.
Okay.
But
Then,
yeah.
so please make me a certified Ghostbuster. Yeah. So you probably got a little card in the mail saying you're a certified Ghostbuster, you got personal membership card, official Ghostbuster medal badge, certificate of anti-paranormal proficiency. So you're proficient in
And
the
it's from
anti.
Columbia Pictures, so it's
Oh,
official.
nice. A year subscription to the quarterly newsletter, and this property is protected by Ghostbusters color stickers. So those stickers ended up all over someone's house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like,
You know, the metal badge has got to be kind of cool, though.
oh, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that thing's probably worth like $1,000 now, because no one cared about it. But,
Yeah.
I mean, just like the flipping Time Warrior watch.
Right? That's how they get you. It's the stuff that nobody buys
Yeah.
that just goes through the roof.
Throw this in a box somewhere.
It was like that with the Action Masters, with Transformers, like for
Yeah.
a while there, because like nobody bought them. They all went to like Big Lots and stuff. So like when you tried to get them on the secondary market, when everybody started collecting in like the mid to late 90s, it's like those were the most expensive G1 Transformers you had to hunt
They're
down
still
was the
kind of
Action
pricey.
Masters.
Yeah, they're
Yeah.
still a little pricey. A lot of the later MicroMaster things too, like the MicroMaster sets, things like that, people are starting to lose interest and the toy line was fading away.
Yeah.
It went from like 12 feet of the toy aisle to like 4 feet. Yeah.
You know, there's still like a warehouse of those things somewhere
Oh,
that
I'm sure.
nobody's popped open the crate.
Yeah, let's see what's in this. Probably.
It belongs in a museum.
Yeah, my house. Anyways, so yeah, Enemy Within is starting to ramp up finally, and we're kind of figuring out what's going on. I was actually kind of surprised Braun's story got wrapped up so fast.
Yeah, it seems like we have less Transformers at this point and more other stuff.
Yeah.
And this issue seemed like it had a lot more going on with that. I mean, between the Transformers story and our World War II fact file and then Machine Man, you
Yeah,
know.
I'm kind of curious about the Autobot fact file thing. Like, why they use that?
I think that was the only way to tie it in is just put Transformers fact file.
And no Transformers in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I
Well, I
was kind of
mean,
hoping there'd be like some Guadalcanal thing so I could try to turn it, tie it to the Combaticons or something, but
who knows? Maybe soon we'll see that. This
yeah.
is it just feels like filler stuff. They're just trying to find ways to pad out the book.
And we'll see more of this too in the future.
Yeah.
This little feature carries on for quite a while.
Anyways, So yeah, I'll go ahead and we'll go ahead and call it there. We've got two more issues of The Enemy Within to go here. It's it's gonna ramp up really nicely, and I took a look I well, had, took a look ahead because I wanted to kind of prepare for like the next couple issues, and we'll see how this thing progresses. And it's nice to see it's not a very complicated story, but it gets personalities really going in the book.
Yeah,
So
we still have two more parts to The Enemy Within, so.
yeah, so I'm sure it'll get better and better. So thanks everyone for being here this week, and we will finish up with the last two issues of The Enemy Within as soon as possible. And Ed, hope you're doing okay out there, man. You take care, and like I
Yeah,
said,
take care, Ed.
anyone who wants to get a hold of him, edhatestransformers@gmail.com. And everyone, if you like the episode, give us some stars, give us some likes, give us some follows, tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad, I don't care. All right. Y'all take it easy. Have a great week. See you later.
For the Mises Guys is performed by Evan Johns and Ed Strickland with Boo of the Excellent Underground.com. Research is also done by Evan Johns, Ed Strickland, and Boo of the Excellent Underground.com. All used images are property of Hasbro, Sunbow, Paramount, and/or Marvel. And without you, none of this would be possible. So thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to you being here every week.